YPG's Desert Rats tested weapons of war so they'd work when soldiers' lives depended on them. Thousands of veterans walk the earth today thanks to their work. After decades of service, all that's left is testament. Desert Rat Testament is a monthly anthology that collects the stories and recollections of retired Yuma Proving Ground employees of decades-long service.
Hello, I'm Mark Schauer. Chief Warrant Officer 4 Jay Stokes was a Green Beret who served in uniform from 1974 to 1998, a former president of the U.S. Parachute Association, an inductee in the International Skydiving Hall of Fame. He was instrumental in relocating the Military Freefall School to Yuma Proving Ground in the 1990s. Can you take us back to when the decision was being made to locate the Military Freefall School at Yuma Proving Ground?
I first became the safety officer in December of 1992. We didn't move to Yuma until 95. So at Bragg, we would be overwhelmed with weather, basically. So from December 92 until about January of 95, we struggled with weather, aircraft, all kinds of different conditions that we just couldn't deal with. We were literally driving 1 hour to get to their drop zone so we could use it. And then we had to set up, and then an hour in the evening, and it became not insurmountable, but it was definitely a challenge. So the decision was made roughly in early 94, or mid 94, we'll say, to go ahead and move west. Now, they had to make a decision on where do we move to. So we came out initially in January, February timeframe to El Centro, to NAF El Centro, Naval Air Facility, right? We set up there. We jumped into Holtville, which had a drop zone set up. The Navy had a program at the time called P3, and they were using Holtville. So we decided we would set up the same way. Weather conditions were conducive to jumping, right? We didn't have weather days or not much in the wintertime, which is what we did have at Bragg. So at NAF El Centro, we did three courses, not quite back-to-back, pretty close. And what we made a decision on was that the students are going to get somewhere around 36 to 40 jumps per person, per course. And it just made our life so much easier. The travel time to the drop zone was less. Everything just, it was, you know, great. After that, after those three classes, though, we also looked at YPG. The Golden Knights trained out there at the time. We came out to YPG, took a look at it, because again, we had to move about 30 families at one time out to someplace west. And the NAF El Centro really didn't have the lodging or facilities to put us up. YPG did. So the decision was made, we're going to move forward with this. We're going to go to Yuma Proving Ground. We're going to set up with the families, and we're going to have some downtime. So as the family started moving, we still ran training at Fort Bragg. July of 95, the families got moved that needed to be moved. We started setting up where we could. Initially, we had a large building / hangar directly across at Laguna Army Airfield where we could pack, set up our oxygen set out systems, do a few other things. But we didn't have what we really needed to start training troops immediately. So we had to work it out. And by August of 95, we were in motion. We ran our first class. It was really pretty smooth. We had set up packing areas on the drop zone on Phillips. And what we would do then is we would literally jump onto Phillips with our students. The instructors would move up to the packing area. They would pack for themselves at the time. The students would recover off the field. The students and instructors would get on the bus. The bus would take us back to a hangar area, but we would set up back there, and then the students would start packing out. Meanwhile, the instructors would pick up their next student, go make their jump, and repeat the cycle.
YPG's primary mission isn't training. It's developmental testing of military equipment, and it had been around a long time before the Freefall School got here. Did you guys encounter any resistance from anybody for...
So the initially, when we got out there, the post commander wanted to treat us as not as a tenant unit, but as a visiting unit, like they did with Golden Knights. And we kind of got through that, where we were established as a tenant unit As a tenant unit, we could use facilities. Fuel would be supplied to us at a tenant unit, as a tenant unit, not as the Golden Knights, as a visiting organization. But the Golden Knights worked with us in the wintertime when they were doing their winter training. We had climb boxes established for safety, so they didn't interfere with our air operation, and we didn't interfere with their air operation. It worked out really well. The post commander, obviously, they changed over. Colonel Philby, he was really the second commander we encountered when we got there. The first commander was a little resistant, but Colonel Philby, he was really a super nice guy, just really good for us. He helped us out so much, I can't tell you how much he helped us. And so he kind of set the tone for whoever came in after him as the post commander, and it worked out really well.
A lot of people don't remember these days that the Golden Knights had their winter training here from 1962 to 2009. During your time here, did you guys associate with the Golden Knights when they were here socially? And
A lot. What's funny is the Golden Knights would come over to us on occasion, and we would actually work with them to get them free fall qualified. See, that's the weird part. They're skydivers. They're in the Army, but they're skydivers. They're working under recruiting command. There was no true requirement for the Golden Knights to be HALO qualified. That said, as a bonus, if you will, to them from us, because sometimes they would support us with airframes, right, aircraft. We would go ahead and train X number of their guys in the December, January timeframe because we had some downtime. And so they liked it. We liked it. We also worked out of their aircraft to get our instructors, candidates, up to speed because we needed faster lift capability. So we would tag on, you know, strap hang, whatever you want to call it, with the Golden Knights some of the time so we could accomplish our mission and train our instructor cadre so they could move on to becoming full-on MFF instructors.
The last I heard, you've had over 27,000 career jumps. Do you recall how many of them you did while you were in uniform at Yuma Proving Ground?
Honestly, conservatively, between 4,000 and 5,000 jumps in uniform just at YPG.
Do you recall how many folks you trained here at YPG during the 2 years or so you were still in uniform?
We would have a class of 64, and we ran 8 courses per year. So 8 times 64 times 3 years.
You retired from uniform in 1998, and you chose to stay in Yuma. Why'd you do that?
Why wouldn't I? You know what? The command was great. The climate was good. Everything worked. I mean, why wouldn't I just go ahead and stay if I could? I actually got orders. You're going to laugh about this. So it's getting close to me to rotate out. And my replacement had already come in, so we're training him, getting him ready to go. And it's around October timeframe, the detailer, he's a branch. He goes, we're going to move you out of there. I said, okay, great. Where are you going to move me to? Back to first group, seventh group, where am I going? No, you're going to Fort Rucker, Alabama. You're going to be the first 180 Alpha Special Forces technician to be the company commander of the Warrant Officer Candidate School. And I had to take a breath because I said, look, Russ, I don't want to be a drill sergeant. I don't want to go down there and watch people roll socks and watch them make their bunks and stuff like that. That's not what I want to do in my latter years. What I want to do is go back to a group, first group, seventh group. I don't care. I know I can't go back to an A detachment, but don't put me there, training unit to a training unit. Put me back in a line unit. At that point, he goes, Mr. Stokes, you can go to Fort Rucker and make W-5, or you can retire. Those are your options. And I said, my paperwork will be on your desk within the next 2 days. And honestly, looking back on it, you're talking 1990, December 97, February 98 timeframe. I didn't see what was going to happen in 2001. Had I seen that, I would have stayed in the military, no doubt.
Well, you retired from uniform, but you certainly didn't retire from jumping.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, you know, it's funny. When I was in the Army, I traveled a lot. But when I retired, I traveled a lot more because I was going to other countries to train their militaries too. When I retired, there weren't a lot of examiners in the field that could train people on, say, military tandem or military free fall or whatever. There weren't that many examiners or course directors that could run training. I could do that. And I had a credential and I had, a pretty good resume. So it worked out for me pretty good. In fact, I helped to start the Marine Corps' tandem program. for the military side. So I taught them how to jump with personnel, taught them how to jump with bundles, everything, and helped them set up their own system. And it's still running today. We did that in July of 98. July of 98 is when we did that. And they're still moving along. I've helped the Air Force. You know, again, I didn't do all this by myself. You know, obviously, you got help. You cannot really do anything without help.
On September 9th, 2006, you set a world record with 640 jumps in 24 hours. How in the world did you do that?
Well, it was a good day. A good day, and we had 125 people working and three aircraft, and just it was an amazing crew of people. But that was our fifth time to do the record. We did it in 95 at Fort Bragg or in Fayetteville area. We did it twice at Yuma or at Summerton Airport. We did it once in Elsinore, California. And then the last time we did it was there in Indiana, 2006, the day after my birthday. I just turned 50 and everybody did their job. The weather was perfect. Aircraft, you couldn't ask for a better crew. It's unfortunate that I can't write every name of every person that helped make that happen.
Well, I know you had four pilots flying three different airplanes. You had other folk packing your parachutes for you.
We would have six packers on station for about 4 hours at a time. Had a pack supervisor. The supervisor stayed on. The other guys rotated out. So we had a machine, literally a machine that was moving forward, right? And it was an amazing thing to watch. And what's really cool for me, you know, you can plan all you want to, but when you step out of the airplane, everything has to run without you. You can't go back and try to fix things. So you got to have a lot of trust in people, right? And I had a really great air boss, Bob Doherty. Everybody else, like I said, did their job. They made sure that I stayed safe, no malfunctions. Everything went like clockwork.
Did you have any trepidation jumping 640 parachutes that other people packed for you?
Not at all. No, no, no. You can't. No, they're good packers. Honestly, the best people in the world to be doing that job. And they were very proud of their contribution. And I was so happy with them.
You were inducted into the International Skydiving Hall of Fame in 2018.
Yes, sir. The induction wasn't just for that. It was for other things. It's a body of work. You know, one event, I don't think one event actually defines you as a person or as a role model. It's a body of work. At the time, I had 45 years in the sport. I had trained a lot of people. I'd worked with a lot of different militaries and civilians. I helped people establish examiner programs for different things. I actually trained the Golden Knights to help them start their tandem program back in 95, as a matter of fact, 96, sorry, 96. So a lot of things that I did, you know, not just me, but people that were supporting me, people that helped me to do things. So it's the body of work that you got to look at.
I jumped tandem with the Golden Knights in 2009, so I guess I have you to thank for that.
It's funny looking back on that, too, because Colonel Green was the commander of the Golden Knights then, and we were actually working out at Pinal Air Park near Tucson, Arizona, and he had approached me because I was one of the only tandem examiners around. He goes, could you train us? So I trained a couple of their guys, initial guys, and then I trained about six or eight more, and then they took on their own program, and they continued the program. So I didn't continue with it. I just got them started. But still, you know, they've done so many good things based on where they started.
You still jump into public events around Yuma these days, like the Military Appreciation Day and so forth?
Yeah, I did Military Appreciation Day. I didn't get to do it this year. I did it the year before. What would that be, 2024? I did it. This year, I had another event going on in Felicity, same weekend, so I couldn't break loose from that to come and do that for Appreciation Day. I just did a 4th of July jump into Redlands, and that one was with the POW MIA flag. And we did a Green Hills Memorial, which is near Palos Verdes, California. So, yeah, I'm still doing those things, too.
Do you still keep up with the free fall school here at Yuma Proving Ground?
Not so much. You know, it's kind of funny. You got to, in my mind, it'd be neat if I was still working there. It'd be neat if I had the ability to go out and just say hi or something like that. But I'm a little... You know, you're a little nervous about maybe that old adage, you can't go back. Maybe that's what's keeping me where I'm at. But I mean, it would be really cool to be a part of that organization again now. But then again, you know, I'm almost 70 years old. So
do you have any plans to stop jumping anytime soon?
I don't think you stop jumping because you get old. I think you get old because you stop jumping. I didn't have that quote myself. I found out on something. I said, it makes perfect sense. I think we get old because we're doing things that we should be doing. You know, we're not moving. We're not doing things to keep the body going.
Hey, Chief, it's really been good talking to you today.
Well, it's my pleasure. It really is. I appreciate your time.
For as long as the United States has a military, Yuma Proving Ground will be vital to the national defense. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on The Testament.